This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. You are watching Wells Tech. This is episode 386 for Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. My name's Martin Spriggs, and you've tuned into a technology podcast that focuses on ministry, or ministry podcast that focuses on technology, or something like that. Doesn't actually matter, because we have fun doing it, and we're happy that you joined us. Joining me each and every week from the beautiful landscapes of New Ulm, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Welcome to Holy Week. Yeah, it's a great week to contemplate our Savior's work on our behalf, and looking forward to Easter Sunday and the celebration that awaits.
Yep, special week, special week. And also joining us for our educationally focused show, our once a month show, is Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great, Martin. How are you guys?
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, super excited to be here. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. These were my favorite subjects to teach when I was in the classroom. So,
and that would be science and social studies. Science was one of my favorites as well. In high school I had old Doc Allison was the professor, and I loved his class because he just told joke after joke. Mm-hmm. He was a chemistry prof. I TA'd for him eventually, and that's kind of the way it goes, I think, sometimes in school. You get drawn to a professor or a kind of a teaching style, and you get more out of it. And I think I got more out of science than anything else. Social studies, maybe not as much. That was just a lot of facts and figures to me. What jazzes you about social studies, Jason?
Well, I just like the human element of it. You know, I had a really great teacher when I was in grade school, and you know, it was more than just the facts and figures, but how those facts and figures impacted people and what their lives were like. That was just a really fascinating thing for me. I really just kind of latched on to that part of it. So, you know, if you kind of incorporate the social part of it and include that into the social studies, you know, then it's not so much history and facts and things like that, but you know, it comes to life. You get
more
some really
life. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Sally, I suppose you were a math person.
Yeah, I'm totally out of this conversation. I do remember a particular history teacher who did just what Jason was saying and really brought things to life, and it was kind of a breakthrough for me, like, hey, this can be interesting, and it was just really absorbing. Now, we love history in the Draper household. We listen to a lot of, is it David McCullough that does a lot of the books, and it's all with the original documents and things that he's writing these books from, and just really a lot of interest there for the Drapers. So good stuff.
So this part of our Wells Tech goes back to school, where we focus on a particular subject in kind of educational technology space, and kind of pick out the top apps and websites and resources that might be available to those who are teaching those subjects, and we try and do it from all perspectives, from the young kids to the middle graders to and beyond. So, where do you guys want to start?
Well, maybe we'll start with science and kind of go through the list for science. And I can kick things off because I found a really great reference for folks at the pre-K kindergarten level. And maybe it would be appropriate for first through fourth graders as well. And that's the PBS Kids website and all the different science games that they have on their website. So they have extensive games associated with each of the PBS Kids shows that are out there, and then they've kind of pulled together from those game options different games that are science related. And so you can come here and just find a huge list. And again, some of them are really simple and don't require reading or anything like that. So you could use it with your preschoolers or whatever. But then some are from more advanced readers and things. So you have to, you know, work your way through the list. But there's plenty here to work through. And I think you can find all kinds of different science applications that you could do with these little games that are available from PBS Kids. So,
yeah, I'm really glad that you pointed this one out, Sally, because this is one of those resources that's just a huge. There's so much great stuff in there, and you know, for especially I get a lot of requests from early childhood teachers that, you know, hey, what do I do with my kids? How do I have all of these things? You know, how can I incorporate these things? Or what's a resource for them to use? And, you know, these PBS Kids games are just fantastic. They're very well designed and really, really developmentally appropriate and do a lot of really good stuff. So that's a good thing to point out and bring up.
Are they specializing in lower grades, or do they have them all up and down the grade school system?
Go ahead, Sally.
I think they're more geared towards lower grades because the PBS Kids TV shows are more geared toward early childhood and then maybe into, you know, first, second grade, that kind of grade level. But they just kind of go along with whatever the shows are that they have out there.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And Martin, I think a lot of where the funding for this comes from is the national initiative that for, you know, STEM and early childhood and those kinds of things. So I know, you know, that's kind of a big focus for the PBS Kids and their interactives. And if you spend a little bit of time in there, it's pretty quick to, you know, they're Curious George, you know, I have a fourth grader who loves Curious George, but I don't know if that's necessarily typical.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So then moving on to the early elementary, in particular, I found a website, kids.gov, that organizes games and things, and for science in particular, they have animals, earth, energy, space categories, and they link to things like NASA sites and other sites. So this is more of a collection of links to games and things that may take people all across the web. So a good collection point. And again, it's organized for grades K to 5, and then there's a teens area as well. We'll list it as early childhood, but you could also find games for the grades 6 through 8 here as well, and they have science and different social studies represented as well. So that's kids.usa.gov. That's the website I had found for early childhood. I'm sorry, for early elementary.
And one of my suggestions for early childhood, or not, sorry, I did the same thing, Sally, for early elementary, is actually just a link to an activity that I did with my students towards the end of my classroom teaching career. So what this was is we basically, I had all the kids bring in gummy bears and gummy worms and all kinds of stuff like that, and then I had a roll of duct tape, and we measured out and put some barbecue skewers on a roll of duct tape and created a wave machine. It was just awesome. Kids had a lot of fun with it, and you know, it gives you lesson plans and things like that to do with it. So my resource at this level was that wave machine. I did this as part of an in-service with some teachers too. Did a kind of a not a team building thing, but you know, we're talking about, you know, innovative things that you can do in the classroom that, you know, do content, but do content through activities. And this was one of the things that we did, and it was so much fun. And teachers had a great time doing it, and you know, I had a couple of them bring them back to their classrooms and do it with their kids, and you know, just a great way to explore energy and mass and its relationship and how it moves and things like that. So that was one of the resources that I had found that I wanted to pass on.
Cool. Are there resources out there for science fairs and science fair projects? So that's I'm sure that's a big struggle in a lot of schools and for a lot of teachers, is to figure out how to how to make this work and how to make it beneficial. Is there stuff out there in that kind of genre?
I would guess so. I, as a parent, I know I've searched for those kind of things in the past, but maybe we'll ask our audience that question, because none of the resources I had to share were necessarily there, but I'm sure that there are sites out there that, that specialize in that, because lots of people are looking for that.
I know, as a parent, that was not my favorite time of year when my children came home and said, yeah, I need a science fair project, and it usually there were usually tears involved and a lot of parental assistance. So I would think some good resources there would be wonderful if anybody's aware of those kinds of things.
That's great.
I didn't come across any.
For the upper elementary, Jason and I actually, I got to the mind map first and claimed this website. It's PHET, Interactive Stimulations. We both added it to our list of sites to talk about, because they've got these interactive things where you can demonstrate visually, and I would guess these would work really great on an interactive whiteboard where you can interact with it right there with your finger and stuff. But they have it all arranged by grade level. And by subject, you know, physics, biology, chemistry, earth science, math. And they even have things listed by device. So if you're looking for a particular grade level or whatever, you can just click in and start these simulations right here, or you can download or embed them on your own website. So lots of possibilities with this interactivity where you can work on area and things in this particular one, and it'll tell you the area and the perimeter as you add to your devices, that your layout that you're drawing there, and it looks like you're trying to match things up as well. So lots of potential here. I could imagine doing this on a smart board and, you know, learning along with the kids the area and perimeter concepts that are demonstrated. So that's just one of many interactives from the PHET site, which is out of Colorado, it seems, with the URL. So, Jason, you probably have real-time experience with that.
Yeah, you know, I have a couple of teachers that have just been used that a bunch, and, you know, incorporate those simulations into their instruction and the things that they're doing, particularly in blended classrooms and things like that. So, you know, that's a great resource, and I'm glad that you're aware of it too, because, you know, there's just so many things on there, and the library just keeps on growing. And, you know, you saw on there that they're transitioning to HTML5 for everything, which is really, you know, really great, because then that makes it work on everything. That'll support an iPad or any kind of a tablet or smartphone or anything like that. So
it seemed like a natural fit for a smart board application or something, you know, a board application of some sort where it's, you know, very tactile and pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and I really appreciate those resources that are web-based like that, that don't require any kind of a special hardware or something like that. And the more accessible things are for kids, I think the better off everybody is, you know, rather than doing the demonstration kind of in front of everybody, you know, hey, you've got an iPad, you've got a phone, you've got, you know, you've got a Chromebook, whatever, let's go in there and you guys do this, and you don't have to wait for me. So lots of really great potential with those.
Nice.
I just wanted to share. I have a game. This is called Stop Disasters. It's pretty old. It's been around for at least a good 4 or 5 years. But kind of like the, you know, how you guys remember SimCity. If you ever played that, where, you know, you're building a city and then you got to try and, you know, sometimes disasters come and stuff blows up. Well, this is, you know, a disaster is coming, and just dives into the science and also some of the social issues that that surround when those kinds of things happen. So just wanted to throw a quick plug in for that. That was my upper elementary. There it is. Forgot to share my screen. I got so excited. So this is the website for it. Lots of good stuff.
Cool. And then actually it's not hard to find resources for high school level, because that's when you get into more of your upper level science classes. One I just came across recently in a class I was taking, similar concept to the PHET site, which is basically online simulations of things, and it's on BioMan. The URL is biomanbio.com, so Bioman Biology. And so ecology, cells, genetics, chemistry, and it's all these different representation, interactive kind of models and things that you can work with for a biology class. And like I said, it's pretty easy to find upper-level science. It's represented on Khan Academy. There's a whole series of videos around all different science for the upper level and lots of other sites, too. Jason, do you have some favorites at the high school level?
My personal favorite, one that I really like for, once again, as a biology pick, this is biodigital.com. So there's a Chrome app. That's basically just a link to it, but you can log in with your Google account, and so I'm already signed in. It's gonna drive me in there, and you can go in here, and with just a free account, you can explore by system, you can go by region, all of these different ways to go in there, and then after it gets done loading, perhaps. Okay, so I've got my skeletal system, and then what I can do is I can rotate this around, and I can click on that part of the skull, and it gives me a little explanation of what it is and where it comes from, and then, you know, I can go in, I can read more, it'll give me a longer article, just looks like it links to Wikipedia. So, you know, we've got all this really great information right here. You know, as you're exploring systems and as you're exploring the human body and those kinds of things, you know, really a great resource for either reviewing or learning more about how all of that stuff works. So biodigitalhuman.com.
I'm assuming you can get into the muscular system and the nervous system and all those things you can layer on there.
Yep, yeah, I'll layer in my digestive system right here. So, you know, and then if I just want to see that, I'll just filter out, and now this is just my digestive system. So, you know, I can go through and I can see all the different parts of it. Or, you know, if I wanted to get rid of my skeleton, or, you know, have my skeletal and my ligaments. So, you know, I can do that and see how, like, where all the cartilage is and things like that. So
it's very smooth. Nice. Seems like you've done a nice job.
Yeah, and it's totally free, which is just awesome.
Cool.
Very good.
So,
well, that takes us through the grade levels for science. We have more links to share besides the ones that we talked about, but we also have social studies links to share. And I scratched my head a little bit about what social studies link would be appropriate for the younger grades. And Jason, maybe you have some more ideas here. But one thing I thought about that's kind of a constant for all grade levels is the weekly reader kind of concept. And you know, we aren't able to necessarily see all of the things they have for the students online, but I do have a link to weeklyreader.com, and there's a whole series geared towards different grade levels where you can get different weekly readers. You can see samples of them online and see what you would get, you know, if you subscribe to the weekly reader or whatever. And I know there are online components to that the students can extend what they're learning in the weekly reader by coming online as well. But this would just be the print versions that you could get through this website. Pretty much a constant. From way back when I was in school, we had Scholastic News or weekly readers. So good stuff. Kind of current events-y or whatever.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, that's
good. But then there's lots of games and things. I'm not sure specifically for pre-KK level, but certainly by the time they're beginning to read and things, they're starting to learn about the states and the globe and a lot of geography lessons down at those lower grade levels. There's plenty of games related to that where they can practice which states are which, or naming state capitals. There's all kinds of variants on geography type quizzing, flashcards. This website, world-geography-games.com, has some really pleasant, it's a pleasant interface and easy to work with. You just, it says where's a particular state, and you click on it. If you get it right, it says good, and You just work through all the different states identifying, and if you think New Mexico is way over here, it says, nope, incorrect, try again, and it'll show you when you get it right. So it'll kind of keep up with how many missed attempts you have as well. So that's just one example of that genre. I don't know, Jason, if you have some in particular that you like around geography type lessons or...
Yeah, and I noticed that I didn't get it into the mind map, so this is gonna be a surprise, but I promise it's a good one. website that I really like is called shepherdsoftware.com. And what this website has is it's got a ton of stuff. You know, we've got science, there's also math, but then we have US geography games. And that's the one that I kind of wanted to highlight. But here again, you know, there's tons of stuff on here. So, and they're all free resources for you to use. So, the ones that I really like and that I used a lot was the U.S. geography. So I used to teach middle elementary. I taught third and fourth grade. And while we were focusing on states and capitals and those kinds of things, we would go in and we would use these activities. What I really like about this is the opportunity to differentiate. So over here in my states column, you know, I've got a beginner, an intermediate, an expert, and a cartographer level. So, so it can even get even more difficult. I have, you know, explorer plus geographer, you know. So, I mean, there's tons of stuff, really great ways to challenge kids that need the challenge, but then also to help meet at least that minimum level for the kinds of kids that need to go there. And if you need to put a little bit more of a push, then you've got that in there. So it would totally, without reservation, recommend shepherdsoftware.com. And then, like I said, the states and capitals games are fantastic, but I know that all of the other materials that they have on there are really good too.
Very good. And then moving on up to the upper elementary level, see if I can share my screen. One that I recommend is actually a podcast, and maybe you would find a podcast on a particular topic that you're studying. The name of the podcast is Stuff You Missed in History Class, and it's from the How Stuff Works group of media that's produced. There's several podcasts that come out of How Stuff Works. And so I would say I've listened to a lot of these myself, and I've found them to be very family friendly or whatever. I don't think they go real extreme in the verbiage that they include in their podcast and things, although some of their views may not agree with what we would agree with. I'm not sure. But a lot of it is just some really interesting historical perspective on times in history or events in history that you don't necessarily get the big story around. And some really interesting tidbits that they include and stuff. So very well done. And like I said, maybe just as an extension of a lesson that you're working on, you can bring this in to an upper elementary or high school level class where you would, get some more of the history that's out there that maybe is not in the traditional curriculum. So the URL is missedinhistory.com.
So are they audio or video?
They are audio. I actually looked for them on YouTube, and I found them on YouTube, but it's just a still image with their audio playing. Okay. So they're out there so that they're part of the YouTube community, and they have lots and lots of videos out there, but they're just an audio podcast.
How long are they typically?
Maybe like 20 minutes or so, and they do have, you know, they have a main topic that they maybe spend 15 minutes on, and then some end of show, you know, mailbag kind of stuff, yeah. That kind of stuff. But very well done, and we've learned a lot from Stuff You Missed in History Class. So.
Yeah, I listen to Stuff You Should Know, and it's just they're so entertaining. They have such really, just really, really good stuff going on there. So mm-hmm. I'll have to check that one out. I haven't heard that.
You know, might give your students some of that enthusiasm like Jason mm-hmm. had about the rest of the story and the social side of things and history and stuff, because they definitely bring some of that stuff in.
My resource that I wanted to point out for these guys is actually a Kariki lesson that I used in my classroom. So this is a combination social studies and science unit talking about chocolate. So you talk with the kids about, you know, how is chocolate made and what is the chemistry behind it and, you know, what's the difference between dark chocolate and milk chocolate and how does that process go, and then, you know, and then talk about a little bit of the history of it too. So nothing fancy about this one. It's just a Word document. So you go into Kariki, you download it, use the lesson however you want to use it, and you know, just really great stuff. So I would recommend, and I used it with third graders. It was probably a little too much for them, but you know, definitely getting into that upper elementary age, that'd be a good place for them to use that.
So what is Kariki?
Kariki is a website full of, we call them OERs, so Open Educational Resources. It's just a community. It's a huge community. It's 433,000 members, and there's over 60,000 resources. So you go onto the website, and it's lesson plans, it's resources, it's materials. You know, if you want to find anything from, you know, chemistry textbooks to history lessons to bulletin board ideas. I mean, there's so many different things that are going on in here. What's really nice about Kariki is that it's they have moderators, so everything is vetted by a volunteer who then gives it a rating and publishes or refuses to publish it. So it's really high quality stuff. Lots of really good things going on in here.
Nate. Maybe we've talked about that in the past, but I don't remember that. But it sounds like a great resource, especially because it's curated. That kind of cleans up some of the junk and makes it more useful and findable.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to the high school level then. One site I wanted to make special mention of was Mapping History. It's from the University of Oregon. So mappinghistory.uoregon.edu. And what's interesting about this site is that they have events in history, American, European, Latin American, and African. So when you click on a particular area, then you see a list of events that happened. For instance, I could click on the American Revolution, and they have a little introductory page that explains a bit about what you're going to see, but the core of it is a map, and in the map you see different points in time, and they've, you know, shown you American victories, British victories, Americans are blue and British are red, and you can step through the points in time and see the movement of troops and different skirmishes that happened at different dates, and just kind of a visual and with excellent explanation provided as well down here below, where they kind of explain what's happening on the map. But a really visual way to see where the events happened in different periods of history. So that's Mapping History.
Cool.
And one that I want to point out is the Google Cultural Institute. So, you know, there's so many great things available on Google, but the Google Cultural Institute basically takes you through, you know, you have different categories. You can do World Wonders. We can do the Google Art Project that takes you through art museums or historic monuments. We can go through, I'm going to pick the First World War, and, you know, just see some of these, you know, some of these primary resources that are available here, you know, things from anything from images and paintings and photos and things like that. But then they also will go, let me see if I can get out of this here. But for some of these, like for example, if we go to the World Wonders, then we can go in and see a street view version of what those different what those different places are like. So, you know, we can go and have a virtual field trip and explore what those locations, what's going on there. So, really cool stuff.
That is nice. Very real time. The world is at our fingertips, and science and social studies teachers that are listening probably have even more resources. We'll share a lengthy list, much more than we have time to show it in the course of this podcast, but we'll have it added to our Wells Tech Goes to School page, and we'd love to hear from our listeners if there's things we've missed. Ryan Rosenthal in particular, I know you've sent us lots of great social studies type resources, and we'd love to hear some of your favorites. Just send us an email or drop us a voicemail or whatever it may be, but you can certainly add to our list.
And reminds me, I have a book recommendation, actually. I've been reading an audiobook that is historical. It's not even historical fiction. It's just historical. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Eric Larson, but he's written a number of these books. He wrote Devil in the White City, which was a book about the World's Fair in Chicago. He wrote about World War II and the Hitler regime. His latest book is called Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lusitania, which I didn't know anything about, came recommended to me, and he's a great writer. But it's basically historical narrative of the crossing of the Lusitania, which coordinates with the start of the First World War, and all the things that went along with Winston Churchill coming to power and Germany coming to power, and all kinds of facts that I think this would be a book that I think boys would enjoy maybe more than girls. Talks about German U-boats and the engineering, so there's some science in here. But I just find audiobooks like this really both entertaining and educational. So that's probably another class of resources that might be available out there where you could tie literature to science to history to whatever and try and tie that together with these kinds of writings. Very cleanly written and very appropriate for many age levels. So if you're interested in that that time period, that's a good book recommendation.
Excellent. Always plenty to learn. Yep. I think that's going to wrap up our discussions topic for today, and we probably are ready to move on to news and tech. And apparently, today's a special day, Martin. You found
today
out today
is World Backup Day. World Backup Day is, I think, usually the day before April Fool's. And there's a site, I think it's worldbackupday.com. I don't know if you have it there, Sally. Oh, you do. Great. A whole site related to World Backup Day talks about why you want to back up. There's kind of a cool video there and a way to pledge. So you can tweet out that you're going to back up today and talks about some of the ramifications of not backing up. And even if you back up just once a year, you're going to lose a year's worth of data at most. But it's probably a good idea to have a backup strategy. We've talked about backup on the show. Now there's lots of things to back up, so it's not just your computer, but you've got tablets and cell phones and you know, pictures that live on those. You know, what would happen if that stuff just disappeared? What would you lose? So Backup Day is just a phenomenon, a worldwide effort to get people aware that, hey, you ought to be doing this. It's not the funnest thing in the world, but boy, is it important that you do it. So I'll ask both of you. You guys all backed up?
Every day.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, everything important that I do is in Google.
Yep. That is one of the strategies they talk about. So yeah, absolutely. And those things that maybe aren't up there, you need to obviously think about whether that's a local backup, but that's probably not even good enough because there can be natural disasters that will destroy anything that is sitting right next to your computer as well. So online backup is a good choice to make. And we've talked about some of those services. We use Backblaze and the Spriggs household. And that just kind of works behind the scenes and just does it each and every day. So you need some kind of strategy on World Backup Day.
All right.
Moving on to a new segment. that we're starting. Actually, it's a an old segment with a new name. We're calling it Wells Now. It used to be kind of our Wells Insider, but it's also things of interest in Wells. And there's a couple things that we wanted to make you aware of. One of them, Sally, you've probably seen firsthand, is a series of devotions published by and print published and printed by MLC called Seasonal Devotions. So they've got a book there that will take you through Holy Week. It's in print, but it's also online in PDF or kind of interactive format online. I don't know what the URL is offhand, but if you go to the MLC website, I think it's front and center there, right, Sally?
It is. But yeah, you certainly can easily get to our Holy Week devotion book that's out on the web, and they have a devotion for each day. This series was written by MLC professors, so you can hear from MLC profs. We did one at Christmas time. It was written by pastors from across the Synod representing all the 12 districts. And if one Holy Week devotional isn't enough, there's one from last year published here as well. So you can get to either. I think over time we'll build up more and more of these. It's a wonderful gift from MLC. I think they often give them as they have traveling groups go out. It's something that we can leave people to give them a little memento of MLC and to help them in their devotional lives. So
nice. Also, under our Wells Now segment, we want to remind everybody about the Wells Tech Conference coming up this summer, July 8th or 9th through 11th. Lots of awesome sessions. Our friend here, Jason Schmidt, is going to be leading a couple of those, and his are extremely popular on Chromebooks. So one of them, I think, is even filled up already, so we'll have to figure out how to make some more room. But we are extending the early bird pricing. We had said that we were going to end that tomorrow, April 1st, but we're going to extend it to another kind of landmark milestone day, and that's tax day. So you'll have till April 15th to not only get your taxes in, but sign up for the Wells Tech Conference for a cheaper price. That's going to be $199 up until tax day, and after tax day it's a little bit more. You'll have your refund by then anyway, so but don't wait. Go to wells.net/Wells Tech Conf.
I'm super excited about the giveaways that you have started promoting on there. Did you get the new Chromebook Pixel?
We're going to do the new Chromebook Pixel.
That's awesome.
Bigger screen, bigger, better, badder specs. And we're going to do some Acer Chromebooks as well, some of the 15-inchers that are out, the bigger screens there as well. And Apple TV and some Chromecasts and all kinds of good stuff. So chances are good that you may walk away with not just a lot of knowledge, but maybe something you put in your bag that you can take back with you.
It's all about the swag. That's why we go.
That's right. So don't wait. Sign up now. Get the classes that you want. Let's move along to our tips, picks of the week. Jason, you're the guest today. What have you got for us?
Well, my pick actually stems from a recent project that I've been working on in our district. So we recently got a 3D robotics drone, which is so it's been just cool. If you have any experience with any of these, you think of this as more of the hacker's drone. So everything is open source. The hardware even is open source. You can go and you can hack the operating system and make it do what you want. But they 3D Robotics recently released what they call Drone Kit, which is basically a platform for developing apps to run your drones. So right now we use this big, huge honking controller that has all of these buttons and switches and things like that. They're fully customizable and programmable, but you really got to know what you're doing in order to be able to have any of those things do something. With this drone kit, what we're going to be doing is working with some computer science kids and have them develop a couple of different apps to control our drone. So anything from planning missions and sending it go around the football field and take pictures every 5 seconds or something like that while a football game is going on for a little while to, push a button and it maps a building, or, you know, all kinds of different things. We're really excited about the possibilities for something like this. So, it's going to be pretty cool. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing works.
And you've got students in your school that are doing this, or is this teachers that are doing the drone kit thing, or?
A little bit of both. It's actually a biology teacher who's really the most excited about this whole thing. And he's like, I want to do this and this and this. And I said, well, it can't do that, but here's this tool. can you identify a couple of kids that would really be gung-ho? Oh yeah, I got these guys. I'm going to find them. And, you know, so we're going to build it into the curriculum and turn it into an elective for a couple of seniors next year. So, that'll be their senior project, is to write an app for our drone.
Very cool. Look good on a college resume, I'm thinking.
I'm thinking you could probably just go right out and get a job at that point. Forget college.
Senior drone technician, yes.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's my turn.
What's up with you?
Something from a class that I'm taking currently, we're looking at technology planning. And one resource that was shared was a guidebook for developing an effective instructional technology plan. And one thing that excited me was it's from Mississippi State University, so if it's from Mississippi, it must be good. But one thing that made me, what did you say?
Isn't it the Rebels?
No, sorry, sir, that's a Bulldog.
Oh.
Ole Miss.
Mississippi, Ole Miss is Rebels.
University of Mississippi, yeah. Anyway.
I'll just keep my
mouth shut. Mississippiologist straight. Anyway.
I don't know my Mississippi geography or schoolology.
Okay. You're forgiven just this once.
But, now I know. Mississippi State Bulldogs. No.
That's right.
Is that okay?
All right. One thing that made me nervous was the fact that the date on it says revised 1999 with minor revisions in 2002, and that seems ancient to me. But the read is not ancient. It's very well done and covers a lot of really good information that you want to include in technology planning, things like demographics and a vision statement and foundational information, your mission statement, your data collection techniques where you're gathering the information, and then all the critical components of the plan from legalities, networking, facilities, learning disabilities in your school, fine arts considerations, just a lot of things I wouldn't think of, but I think are very pertinent and are explained really well in this PDF guidebook that's available. It's a free download. It comes from a website called the National Center for Technology Planning, and again, it looks a little bit dated, but I've found some really thought-provoking articles here about technology planning. And in my class, this is what they pointed us to. So apparently someone there has vetted it and felt like it was worthy of still looking at in 2015, even though it's a little bit old. If you're looking for some ideas around technology planning, this may be a good place to start. It's called The Guidebook for Developing an Effective Instructional Technology Plan. One more thing along these lines, and that is, recently in the Wells Google Schools, there was some discussions around discipline policies for Chromebooks. And I thought this kind of fit because acceptable use policies and things like that need to be baked in as you're looking at your technology plan. And this is from Illinois Lutheran Schools, shared by John Dorn with the community. And I asked his permission if it was okay for me to at least share it here. It's a link that I can share in the show notes. And it just kind of walks through different levels of violations and responsibilities around having the Chromebooks, so what kind of discipline there's going to be involved if there's some abuse of the Chromebooks in different ways. And it even has different scenarios that they explain at the end of the policy so people understand, you know, what the consequences are and things. So you're giving the students these devices. You want to obviously expect them to be good digital citizens, but you need to have some policies in place around that. So I thought this was a great example and wanted to share it on the show.
Yeah. Thank you to John for his willingness to share that.
Mm-hmm.
My pick is actually another journaling app. I had talked about Day One a while back, which is an iOS-only app. And that was part of my frustration. It's a beautiful app, works really well, except it's not cross-platform, and I'm not always on an iOS device. I do switch around once in a while, and I'm on the web, too, when there really is no Day One on the web. So went on a hunt and found another tool that maybe is not quite as visually compelling, but has all the other ingredients for a cross-platform journaling app. It's called Diaro, D-I-A-R-O, and you can find it at diaroapp.com. And it works on Android, it works on iOS, there's an Amazon app as well, and it works on the web. And it does all the things that I want it to do. Basically, you know, it does the basic text, of course, entry, but you can add pictures. It'll capture location. You can do tagging. You can do sharing and syncing as well. It syncs through Dropbox, so you can get a free Dropbox account, connect it, and then just make sure you have Dropbox installed on wherever it is that you've installed the app, whether it's your iOS or Android app or Amazon or on the web or with your computer. They do a nice job with keeping it simple, you know, kind of a straightforward design with a calendar. You can put folders together, images like I mentioned. The only downside is it's not free. It's $4 if you, well, it is free just for a single app, but if you want to sync between apps like the web and your iPad, whatever, like I'm doing, you'll have to pay the $3.99 or whatever it is. But money well spent. They say simple, effective, personal, and it really is all those. So I think this is probably what I'm going to be sticking with, and happy that I found it. I was really surprised there were not more of these kinds of cross-platform apps out there. There just aren't. This is one of maybe a handful of apps out there. They all seem to kind of gravitate toward one platform or the other. So you've got Day One on iOS, and there's one called Flava on Android, which works really well, but neither one of them are cross-platform. So this is the one that seems to kind of cross all those boundaries. Diaro.
Cool.
Very good.
All right, let's move along to our community feedback section, Sally. We've heard from one of our regular contributors, Rob Gunther.
Yeah, Pastor Gunther's got some cool stuff going on up there in Kenai, Alaska. And one of them was a link that he shared to his first through fourth grade classroom at their school at Grace in Kenai. And the up-to-date, really nice-looking classroom page has memory work, has you know, things that are coming up for the class, things like that. And what he said was it has been a struggle, and I'm thinking a lot of our listeners would probably relate. It's been a struggle for the teachers to keep their classroom pages up to date, and so he found an easy way to help them do that. He basically set up a Google Doc and shared a link to it using Bitly, so they have a really nice short link that will get them to this Google Doc. He made that doc publicly editable. So if they just get there, they can type into it. They don't have to log into a Google account or anything. Now, that may seem a little bit dangerous, but if it's a really long Google account, it's not like anyone is going to figure it out or anything. So you keep your link to it, you know, only known by your teachers and things. They can get there, they can make their changes, and then he published that page as a web page and was able to embed it on his final website. So when they make the edits, it immediately shows up on their website.
Nice.
So,
it looks nice. Like it's part of it. It doesn't look like embed code at all, does it?
Mm-mm. It's just right there. So it even has a date when it was last updated. So,
wow, cool.
Looks like an easy solution. You know, the teachers don't have to do anything but remember the link that gets them to the page. And he said one of his non-techie teachers whipped out her smartphone, tried the link, and started updating the page from her smartphone. So they were excited to have it and found it very easy to use, and hopefully their classroom websites are going to be more up to date because of it. So nice. That's the more serious things that Pastor Gunther sent along. The more cool things that he sent along were a link to a Kickstarter project called PancakeBot, where you actually can draw a picture. If I could play this video, I don't know if it'll show very well. But you can draw a picture and put it through a software. I'm just trying to kind of skip. And it traces over in their PancakeBot software and fills in. And then the PancakeBot does that for you. Isn't that crazy?
That's and the first awesome. One
you traced first, it does those first so they get done more. And so that outline looks darker because it was done first. So if you wanted a pancake shaped like your child's drawings or whatever it may be, Pastor Gunther suggested we might need Wells Tech logo drawing pancakes for Wells Tech or whatever. What a cool project. And they have some other videos on the page. I admit I was quite taken by it. Well, it's a Kickstarter project, and all the cheaper prices are gone, but now you can get in for $179
okay.
and get a pancake bot, and you're still saving $120 off the retail price of $299. So they're going to retail it at $299. Puts it right on a griddle. They have another video where they show that they drew the outline with the batter, and then they stopped it and got that regular batter out of the way, and by hand they filled in with a different colored batter that had some food coloring in it. So it became a two-colored thing that they made with their pancake bot. Now, what kind of church school ministry application can we find for the pancake bot? I don't know. That's that's the challenge. But you guys put your thinking caps on. Maybe your church needs a pancake bot. Who knows?
I'm sold. I wanna figure out a way to put one of these in my kitchen.
This combines Jason's love for 3D printing and food.
Yeah.
You know, that's really funny because I just found out about this today, but here, I'll just share my screen. It is someone over the weekend created an Easy Cheese 3D printer. So they figured out a way to just have their crackers automatically get Easy Cheese on them. So that's fantastic. Good stuff.
Yikes. All right.
One more from Pastor Gunther, and he just sent this one across this afternoon. Something new from Amazon. If you're an Amazon Prime member, apparently this is an exclusive offer for you. You can get a little button for some of your favorite products. So if you use Tide detergent, for instance, you put this small device, I guess magnetized to your washing machine,
It's adhesive, I heard.
Okay, and when you're running out of Tide detergent, you push that button and Amazon will automatically deliver to you some of these favorite products. So your Tide would show up at your doorstep with your free shipping for Amazon Prime.
It's stuff that you order frequently, you know, Huggies, you know, Tide, paper towel.
But I never order these things. I go to the store and buy them, but apparently I can order them. I just never thought of that. So, yeah.
You have to be careful if you've got kids. They'll go around pushing all your buttons, and then 2 days later,
massive shipments charged to your credit card.
Hand carts to bring all the stuff to your door.
I think what I saw though was that it sends a confirmation.
Yeah, it has to confirm with your smartphone. Yeah.
I think Amazon is doing some really interesting things, like, you know, between these little buttons to get things to come to you and, you know, the Alexa or whatever the speaker is, you know, where you can just order stuff with your voice. I think they're really doing some interesting things with how they're trying to get you to spend your money.
This kind of stuff. I mean, they would have, you know, the Tide people would love to have a Tide button attached to your washing machine. I can't imagine that they're lining up for this stuff.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. I assume it works through Wi-Fi and then off it goes. So pretty cool.
Definitely. All right, just one mention from me on the community feedback board, and that's a link to edweb.net, where they have a whole series of webinars that they regularly offer for free on different education topics. So today you could have gotten in on tips and tools for flipping your classroom, you need it, reading promotional programming that really works, or crafting argument, writing for college and career readiness. So that's just a few examples of the many webinars that they have available on edweb.net. Do you have any experience with them, Jason?
Yeah, I've gone to a couple of webinars. They do a really good job of finding some really high profile people to present. You know, Steven Anderson, Webtool Classroom, he's been on there a couple of times. And they have one in particular where I can't remember what the topic is, but they have he's a Medal of Honor recipient. And you know, talks about, you know, what he did and how he got his Medal of Honor, and then, you know, just really good stuff for professional learning and growth. You know, I wouldn't necessarily use it with kids, but you know, if you're looking for, you know, you've got an hour and some bandwidth to spare, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff going on there. So good pick, good thing to show.
And they do say that you can get a continuing ed certificate for attending.
Are they free?
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Awesome. Very awesome.
Yeah.
And they have a social network too, where you can kind of link up with other people with similar interests and those kinds of things. So good resource to bring up and have people look at.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Sally. Mm-hmm. We moved our ministry resources to a new section here, so now is the time for that. Sally, you came across some Easter resources from churchtechnology.com. Lauren Hunter, we've interviewed before, and she or they put together a nice resource list.
Yep. Got an email from Lauren today with Easter Resource Roundup, where they've kind of scoured the web and found different things, free Easter resources to make your Sunday better, inspiring affordable Easter stock photography, ways to communicate differently on Easter, just a lot of different things. Now, obviously, you're going to use your own discernment as you check out the resources that are available, but it might very well be something that you could use, maybe not this Easter since it's just right around the corner, but
there's still time
for next year. Yeah, there's still time. So check it out.
All right, we have a Wells Tech tagged, playlisted video this week. What is that, Sally?
Yeah, I was looking around for something in our science social studies kind of theme, and I found a YouTube channel called Kids Animal Channel, and we've tagged this one Social Animals, Solitary Creatures, where is just one example of the many videos available from the Kids Animal Channel. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But a lot of really fun and cool animal video. They have it organized on playlist around funny videos, wildcats at the zoo, birds life, splash into the sea. They've got lots and lots of videos that they've produced here, and they look to be of super high quality. So obviously you want to check them out before you show them in your classroom, but if you're looking for a resource for animal videos, these look fun and well done. Kids Animal Channel.
Looks good. Very stuff. Well done. Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next week, I'm going to be on the road, Sally, and so I'm going to be down in Austin visiting my son and daughter-in-law. They had moved down there last summer, so we haven't been down there yet. In fact, I've never been to Austin, so I'm looking forward to it. But so I'll be on the road, so we thought we'd take this opportunity to have a show focused on technology that you carry with you. So we'll do kind of a what's in the bag. We've done this before, so Sally and I will get our heads together and share with you what we figure we need to have with us wherever we go. So that'll be next week.
Looking forward to it, Martin. I hope you have safe travels and a very happy Easter in Texas. It's going to be warm and lovely, I bet.
I hope so. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. You always bring your A game, and you did so this week. Thanks again.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to participate. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
All right. Thank you all for joining us, whether you're tuning in live or whether you're watching us in your time-shifted fashion, whether that be audio or video in iTunes or wherever. We're happy that you do so. Please share the fact that you find something good here, and hopefully we can increase our audience more and more and share some of this good stuff that we talk about each and every week. We'll be back next week again, every Tuesday afternoon, 4 p.m. So blessings, everybody. Enjoy the walk to the cross and the view into the empty tomb. Thanks. Bye-bye.